available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everybody, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 247 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 247 Sports Network. And we are the Podcast of Champions, talking Pac-12 football, as always. And we got a very special show today, Dave. Very excited about it.
Yeah, we've got Greg Biggins on, which is going to be phenomenal. We always love talking to Greg, and he's going to be breaking down all of the Pac-12 recruiting classes. We're going to exhaust him. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, if you want to send us some questions, we got some Twitter questions we're going to get to later, email questions. Our email address is pac12podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @pac12podcast. The website, pac12podcast.com, and our voicemail line, 641-715-3900, extension 734-972. And we had some people asking about Google Play, Dave. We are now on the Google Play. So if you're trying to get the Podcast of Champions on Google Play, I thought it was there. It was not. Then I thought we were back there, and it was not. But now we're there. So we're on Google Play. Just search for Pac-12 Podcast, Podcast of Champions, and you'll find us.
It's amazing how many different podcast apps there are that like I've never heard of. I mean, Google Play, obviously, I've heard of, but, like, some people use something called Stitcher.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. Why? Just use the stupid podcast app that's on your phone.
I don't know. There's a bunch. And actually, Audio Boom does a good job of, like, sorting them out. So we'll add ourselves to a bunch of the other ones as we go. But the Google Play was a big one. We wanted to make sure. We're on iTunes, of course, but we wanted to be on the Google Play, too. And now we are. So if you're an Android guy or gal or whatever, you can do that.
Stop calling it the Google Play, because that makes me think you're 85 years old. Just Google Play. Just Google Play.
It's on the Google Play.
It's on the it's on the TV screen.
Yeah.
That's my impression of you as an 85 year old.
Nice. I'm getting there. I'm getting close. Well, Dave, hey, I have a question for you, Dave.
Sure.
Yeah. What if a point guard hit 80% from behind the arc, or a quarterback completed 80% of his passes?
Well, now when you're hiring, you can play at that level, because 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day.
That makes ZipRecruiter the smartest way to hire. A single click distributes your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there.
No, ZipRecruiter's powerful technology learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter scouts talent for you.
And our listeners can try it for free. What you got to do, go to ZipRecruiter.com/POC. That's Podcast of Champions. ZipRecruiter.com/POC. That's ZipRecruiter.com/POC.
ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire, and the official hiring partner of the Pac-12 Conference.
All right, and as promised, we have Greg Biggins, National Recruiting Analyst for 24/7 Sports, here on the Podcast of Champions. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Biggins. And I was watching his Fox Sports West show. If you missed that, you missed the treat, man. Greg, you were talking like a million miles an hour. They had you talk for like 3 hours straight. It was some great work. We won't expect you to do that here today, but thanks again for coming on.
Oh, man. Anything for you two fine gentlemen, heroes of mine. Huge fan of both you guys. I could go on and on and on.
Please do. Yeah. Please right do. There. I mean, we'll be here right for a while.
True. Woody? God, we don't talk anymore. I don't even know who you are anymore.
I know. We just share snarky texts. That's all we do now.
About the disgracefulness of Steve Alford.
I know. Well, he is what it is. But this isn't a Pac-12 basketball podcast. Yeah, no, I mean, he's
garbage.
Can it
be? Can we make it One? No, I'm kidding. How are you,
Brian?
Yeah, let's
just talk for the next 30 minutes.
Yeah. Greg, I'm doing good. Thank you. And I really want to know, though, how hard was that? Because, man, you went through a lot of dudes on that Fox Sports West signing day special show. I was just watching. My mouth was drying up just hearing you try to, like, go through, like, guy after guy after guy.
You know, Ryan Abraham, I figured there's people out there that are defending our country. And for me to be able to talk about a couple high school kids, I cannot compare myself to those those heroes out there that are laying it on the line. Those are the real heroes rather than me just talking gibberish for a couple hours. But no, on a serious note, like, I wasn't conditioned for that. Like, it was hard. After a while, my voice kind of started to fade a little bit. And as fast as I talk, it was a lot of info. My voice was kind of deaf after the first hour. I had to suck it up. I had to dig down deep. I had to take it one play at a time, and I had to finish. That's what I did. Every cliche you can think of, that's what I was telling myself. Just one play at a time, one round at a time. What would Rocky Balboa do at a time like this? And we did it. We got it done. So
it's all mindset. It's all mindset work.
It's all you got to do. Mind over matter.
Yep.
Yes.
Rise and grind. Rise and grind.
Hey,
Greg Biggins.
Got to answer the bell.
Dave, I don't know if you got to see it, but it was great. Like, imagine, you know, pick like 20 random high school running backs, and then you got to describe something about each and every one of them. And it's like you start running out of, like, well, I already used that term for this other guy. And you just wonder,
dude,
like,
reading my mind. You're reading my mind. You're trying to say something different, but the reality is every kid is, you know, dynamic or explosive, or they can make a mess in the open field, or they have a great head in the backfield. And so you have another guy. See, I already used those three or four terms. Let me just make up something. I'll just say he's got a really great personality and he tries hard. So you're just trying to make it different.
They all just have great
feet.
Trying
to make it unique.
They're all great kids.
Great
with feet.
And good kids.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Oh, God bless our friend Annabelle. Yes.
Nice.
Good kids. That
was
great.
That was beautiful.
Blast.
Good feet. Everybody was great feet and good kid.
Yeah. Well, you did. It was great. I thought you did an amazing job on that. So I wanted to let people know. Follow Greg on Twitter.
I appreciate that, right?
Yeah. I mean, Greg got a lot of great stuff on recruiting, especially on the West Coast. If you want to hear about the LA Kings or you like a good car chase, Greg has all of those on his Twitter account. So
probably my three favorite things are recruiting, car chases, and the LA Kings, the reverse order. Probably I would say the Kings, the car chases, and the recruiting would be a distant third behind those two. And Mike Trout would probably be above football recruiting as well.
When we're just sitting at home like at night, and then Jen will go, Greg tweeted about a car chase, so we have to turn on, you know, channel 9 or 5 or wherever it's on. And so, you know, we're monitoring Greg's Twitter account just because we'd like to see the car chases.
No, dude, I'm a fan of dude Jana. I honestly, a lot of times she notifies me. So I tell her I appreciate her being on top of it and let me know when there's something going on. KCal, let's go.
Nice. Well, okay, so what we wanted to do was break down not as much in depth as you did on that Fox Sports West show, but, you know, each recruiting class in the Pac-12, we do have some Twitter questions, and we got a couple voicemail questions. It was actually from the same guy. So I'm going to play these for you. Maybe we'll start with that, and then we'll do a countdown. So here's his first.
Okay.
Here's his first one.
Hey guys, this is Danny. I just dialed your number, followed by the extension 734972. I always have a question. Do you have really 734,972 extensions, or is this just a way to confuse the rest of us? Anyway, wanted to get your take on the recruiting classes. Go Bruins. Goodbye.
So pretty generic. We're going to talk about that. He left another one. He doesn't like our long extension. Here's the other one.
Hey, guys. I just dialed your number and then dialed the extension, which is 734972 65 pi over 3 e to the MC squared. So thanks for that. Wanted to ask a question about football with regards to which teams do you think best filled their positions of need and which ones did the worst job at filling their positions of need? Love the show. Talk to you soon. Bye.
So long.
Wow. Apparently we're answering a question from a guy in a war zone. So that's cool. You know, Biggins, it gives you a little context. You know, you can think about that when you're answering the question.
No, man, absolutely. Those are some interesting questions. Who did the best and who did the worst at filling needs? I would say, looking at our Pac-12 ranking, first off, you know, the glass is always half full for me, so I'm going to say everybody filled needs, but the schools that did the best would probably be reflected in how we, you know, how those schools finished up in the 24/7 sports rankings, which is USC, Washington, Oregon, UCLA, and Utah would be the top five. And if you're looking for teams that maybe didn't do as well, you're looking at Oregon State, Arizona, Colorado, and Washington State. That's just kind of how they finished up in the rankings. But honestly, I'm not just saying this to be to make everyone happy. I honestly thought the whole Pac-12 as a whole did a really nice job. I mean, Oregon State was our 12th school, and I thought Jonathan Smith did a pretty nice job of closing. I'm a big Jamar Jefferson fan. He got a late offer from Tennessee. Even USC was kind of making a little late push, but he decided to go ahead and stick with Oregon State. Joshua Gray chose Oregon State over Arizona State. Matthew Tago chose Oregon State over Nebraska. Interesting recruitment there. He's an early UCLA commit to kind of cut him loose, and then Nebraska wanted him as a quarterback. Oregon State said linebacker, but he chose the Beavs. And overall, man, I kind of like Oregon State. Like I said, they finished 12. So it's not just about where you finish in the Pac-12, but kind of more about, did you fill needs? Do you have some impact guys coming in? Is there a few guys you could you know, see maybe playing as a true freshman? Who has a chance to be really good, you know, 3 to 4 years from now? And so, man, honestly, I thought the Beavs did pretty good for coming in in our 12 spot.
I feel bad.
I just jump ahead. Were you gonna ask me kind of go 12, 11? I jumped right ahead to Oregon State.
That's okay. I hopefully you have more to say about our number 12 team, but we're gonna go 12-1 in the 24/7 sports recruiting rankings. And as you mentioned, so a little teaser. We know the number 12 team is
Oregon State Beavers.
Dude, I had no idea you had that all set up. I would not have jumped it if I would have known you had such a cool little beaver thing and the whole deal.
That's how
that
we roll.
Outstanding.
Here. Yeah. So
apparently, I need to listen to the show more often.
Huffman listens, man. Huffman listens to us. Come on.
So with Oregon State, Huff how much? Huff is the goat. I mean, no offense, but to anybody out there.
Hey, I'm okay Huff. With that. I'm okay with that.
Huff is the all-time goat. Oregon State. So how much of this class was put together by Jonathan Smith, you know, coming down the stretch?
I would say most of it. You know, a lot of those guys that I just named, I don't think were really seriously considering Oregon State prior to Jonathan Smith. You know, John McCartan, another kid I like. He's a tight end, defensive end. You know, I think they're going to take him as a defensive player, but he was getting a lot of late interest. He was, you know, had trips planned. Washington State, I believe, was going to get one that last week before signing day. He was looking back east. Virginia was making a little bit of a push. UCLA was even kind of sort of involved. He visited Oregon State and just canceled everything else and committed on the spot. That's another guy I think has a chance to be a difference maker down the road. A lot of these guys are down the road guys. They need to fill out, get bigger, stronger. Joshua Gray, already mentioned him. You know, he's an offensive tackle who's probably maybe on a good day 245 pounds. And I think that's where you kind of see the difference between, you know, what a five-star looks like versus a three-star. There's really not that much difference. People kind of freak out about, oh, we got all these three-stars. Three-stars is a really good football player. Just we're kind of just saying it might take them longer to get there, whereas the five-star can come in and play right now. Joshua Gray is a really good athlete, probably the most athletic O-lineman out west. But, again, you're 245, so can he keep that athleticism when he adds the necessary 50 pounds that he's going to need to? That's always the question mark, but from a pure standpoint, you know, he's really good. Jamar Jefferson is really good. So, man, overall, you know, I think Jonathan did a really good job those last 2 weeks before signing day. He probably filled half that class in the last 2 weeks.
So 23 players, members of the class, 21 of them were three stars. Like you said, they were the 12th ranked class among the Pac-12, and it wasn't that way. They kind of fell down a spot late in the process. Do you think this is something that with Jonathan Smith, he can get them to kind of move up a little bit? So maybe, you know, with a full year under his belt, be able to be a top 10 kind of class in the Pac-12 and sort of move up there? Or are they kind of going to be in the spot just the nature of where they are and how they recruit?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the latter. You know, I think USC, Washington, UCLA, Oregon, maybe Stanford when they have a full load. Those are always going to be your top five. Utah really closed well, and they jumped up to five. Arizona State really closed well, thanks to Antonio Pierce. The Arizona, Colorado, those schools are traditionally always going to recruit probably better than Oregon State. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean Oregon State can't win, because, again, there's very little separating number 12 from number 6 or 7. I mean, I was shocked. I love what Washington State did. I thought Washington State was number 5, and then just for the heck of it, I checked like the day after signing day, and they were down at number 9. So I'm not sure how that happened, but I love the Cougars class. So I think, again, people may look at, oh, my God, we're number 11 or 12, but there's really not that much, maybe a player or two separating, you know, number 5 Utah and number, you know, 11 Arizona. So you can finish at the bottom of the Pac-12, but as long as you're still getting guys, as long as you still coach them up, you still develop those guys, you put them in a scheme that fits, that's how you win football games. It's not just about getting the best players. We've seen a lot of teams with good players that they don't maximize those players' talent. So there's a lot of ways to win other than just having a top 5 ranked recruiting class.
Should we move on, Dave?
Let's do it.
Okay, so just for purposes of letting everyone know, Oregon State had the 70th ranked recruiting class. So 70th and 12th in the Pac-12. The number 11 squad is
Arizona Wildcats.
And they actually had the 58th. Yeah, the 58th ranked.
Oh, I love that. Class.
Yeah.
I love that. That is awesome. So Arizona, what do you think, Woody? Did you like their class? I'm going to ask you the question.
Considering all the turmoil with the head coaching situation, yeah, kind of. I mean, you lose your head coach and then you have a Kevin Sumlin come in on kind of, you know, short window. Yeah, I mean, what'd you think? I mean, how much of an impact did the coaching change positively or negatively have on this class, like based on what you saw?
I mean, the thing with Arizona was they were probably a school that was hurt by the early signing period. I don't know what the numbers were, but they only had maybe one or two spots left. And I think Kevin could have came in there if he wanted to and said, hey, I'm sure he evaluated the kids who signed, which was what I think 90% of that class was early signees. He probably could have said, okay, you guys are out. You're not going to play here. Get out of your letter of intent. He could have done that if he wanted to, but he did not. He kept those guys. We don't really know. I'm a fan of Kevin Sumlin, first off. I thought that was the guy ASU should have went on. That's another story. But I think he's going to do a really good job recruiting. But we didn't get to see it because, like I said, he only was able to get maybe one or two new names in there. But looking at their class top to bottom, I think it's solid. I think it's, you know, got the quarterback that they really needed, Jamari Joyner. Pretty good DB class. You know, obviously, they have Coach Meat, former UCLA coach there now, so I think they're going to be really aggressive with defensive backs. But, you know, Day-Day Coleman was a guy who was originally committed to UCLA, and he committed or signed either the day of or the day before signing day. I think that might have been one of the only two guys they had the spot for. So Coleman was the guy. They already had Javon Hill locked in early, ironically. Another early UCLA commit. He went ahead and signed early. So, and then looking for a sleeper in this class, Thomas Marcus is a guy for those star chasers. I kind of pushed a little bit late for as a four-star guy. If you're looking for, you know, those four stars, it's those guys that have high-end upside. NFL tools is kind of what we would term it. And here's a kid who's pretty athletic, basketball player. He's 6'4". Wide receiver, can run and jump, and I think he has all the tools you're looking for to be a Sunday-type player. So Thomas Marcus is maybe one of the guys, I think, in that class that has a chance to be pretty good. Also was a fan of Mackenzie Barnes, who played for the late, great Tony Perry with DB Grew. I think overall Arizona did a pretty nice job, but I expect them to do an even nicer job next year when Kevin has a full year to get going.
Greg, so I think Arizona signed 16 players, if I'm not mistaken, during the early signing period. Now, they brought in a big-name coach in Kevin Sumlin. Did you hear any kind of rumblings about that some of the guys might want to get out of their letter of intent because, you know, Rich Rod was fired after they signed?
Yes, there was rumblings, but once Kevin Sumlin was announced, you kind of put an end to those talk right away. I mean, he's a really well-respected guy. He has a lot of strong West Coast ties. He was an active head coach. So A&M recruited heavily out west, and he was a guy that was always out here, you know, going to games, doing home visits, connecting with the coaches. So all those kids already know who he is, and he, obviously Arizona recruits Texas pretty well. So there was already that connect. That's why I thought this was a home run hire for Arizona to get Kellen Sumlin. He was my first choice. I know they're talking to the head coach from Navy, who I think is a great football coach, but just in terms of fit, I think Sumlin fits Arizona pretty well. So, yeah, once he was named, there was no more talk about getting out of your letter of intent.
Do you think Arizona with Sumlin can, I don't know, ever become like kind of the premier recruiting power in that state over ASU? Is that a realistic goal for that program?
Absolutely. What do you think?
I think so. I think, yeah? I think more in the context of who Arizona State has as their head coach. I think that's what makes it, but I was wondering what you thought.
No, I'm a Sumlin guy. I mean, you haven't really figured out already. I do like Kellen Sumlin. Again, I thought he would have been a good fit at Arizona State or U of A. And the reason why I like him in Arizona was I feel like to win at Arizona, you're not going to really be able to out-athlete the other team. You're not going to be able to necessarily out-talent them just because you have to go and rely on other states. You need to go find someone who I think can go recruit. Also, you know, someone who's, you know, got a national reputation. And I think in Sumlin, Arizona kind of has that street cred now to go into California, go into Texas. They can even go national. And I think they are going to bring in, you know, because realistically in the state of Arizona, it's a pretty good state, but it's never going to, you're not ever going to beat teams just by keeping that fence around the top players in Arizona. You still have to go out of state and to fill the majority of your class. So I think someone's got a chance to do some things at Arizona. I think next year, shoot, they got Khalil Tate back. They got most of their team back. They should win between 8 to 10 games and actually kind of get things rolling. So, yeah, to answer the question, I think he does have a chance to do that.
Yeah, I'm a Sumlin fan, too. I mean, he recruited the best players out of Arizona when he was at A&M. So it'll be curious to see what he's able to do there now he's at state.
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to move on to our number 10 team, ranked 52nd overall, number 10 in the Pac-12. We have
Colorado Buffaloes.
All right, so who stood out to you among the Buff signees here?
So overall, I think again, solid class. I don't know if they have a headliner or that, you know, that one guy that kind of just screams like, you know, NFL guy. But I think top to bottom, you know, it was good. They went the JUCO route. I think they had like 5 or 6 guys who already early enrolled. Ray Robinson is not to be confused with the boxer from Raging Bull, a different Ray Robinson. In-state guy, safety, linebacker. He is already enrolled. I could see him as being a guy who can make an impact pretty soon. I like Demetrius Stanley. He's an athlete type, can play receiver or DB. I like, again, they went for length with receivers. You know, Dylan Thomas, Daniel Arias, both a couple of 6'3", 6'4 kids that can run a little bit. I know Arias is a kid who you know, our guy, Goat Huffman, pushed a little bit at one point, thought he could be a 4-star guy. Clyde Moore is a real tough physical kid from Kern Del Mar. And, you know, I think maybe next to Huntington Beach, when you think of gritty, tough kids, you think of Newport Beach as where they come from, and I'm kind of being facetious. You guys just aren't feeling me right now. I'm expecting at least a little chuckle from Woody.
So, I was chuckling.
Kern Del Mar on the inside.
Huntington Beach is tough, right? Huntington Beach is a tough area.
South Central Huntington Beach is a place that you do not want to walk around at night without some weapons. That's how I got to
You know what? You know what? Inland El Segundo, like, you know, a couple of blocks right off the beach. Whew. That's a rough neighborhood.
Tell you
what, man. I'm in East Hermosa. It could be tough, you know. So.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Southeast Hermosa is also, you know, scary place. You don't want to walk in. They don't have dark alleys in Hermosa, but if they did, watch out. So Clyde Moore, though, is a stud. This guy is tough. He's physical, inside guy, 6'1", 225. I could see him being one of those players who's going to be a, you know, a 3-year starter, and people are going to say, man, how did Colorado steal this kid from Southern California? Clyde Moore, he's a good football player. You know, I'm then curious about Blake Stenstrom. You know, he's a guy who I think as a sophomore we saw him and thought, man, this guy, you know, has a chance to be, you know, really, really good. I'm not sure how much more he's developed since then, but I still think he's got a chance. So again, he's, you know, he's a good size kid, 6'2", 6'3", 195, and he's got some weapons to throw the ball to as well. So overall, Colorado, who was my school growing up in the Bill McCartney days, Eric Bieniemy, Darian Hagan. I love the helmets, my favorite helmets, my favorite uniforms back in that time. So I've always kind of liked Colorado, and I hope they do well. And again, it was pretty solid. You said number 10 in the Pac-12, so that's not bad. I think that's a school that you could see in that 5-7 range every single year. So maybe not as good this year as we'd like them to be, but no reason why next year they can't bounce back and be in that, you know, 5-7 range every year.
Greg, this was a team in 2016 that won 10 games, won the Pac-12 South. Did that kind of – was there a little bit of a boost in recruiting coming off of that season? And, you know, maybe when they struggled a little bit this season, did that hurt them a little bit? I don't know how much that impacted this class at all.
I mean, they say the boost you get usually doesn't happen that year, but the following year. So it should have been this year where we should have saw the boost. So I was a little surprised that you didn't see maybe a little better class overall. But I think what happened last year was, you know, I felt like last year's class, obviously they did get that boost, you know, a year early. The team was rolling. And then it just seemed like last year there was a lot more excitement among the players. You know, you talk to like Tyler Lytle, the quarterback, and he was that, you know, really aggressive recruiter who kind of rallied a lot of the players, and you kept hearing about the Colorado group chat. And, you know, they're all really aggressively recruiting each other. And I always kind of say, you know, sometimes players can have as big an impact recruiting their peers as the coaches themselves. And I saw that 2 years ago. I didn't really see it this past year. You just didn't hear that same buzz that you heard 2 years ago. So that could have had something. That could have played a little small role in it.
Anything else, Dave? Should we move on?
Let's move on.
Dave's Colorado Buffaloes, man. That's his team. It's always it hurts him to see.
It just breaks my heart when they're you know, down there at number 10.
Number 9, and also number 45 overall in the country, we have
Washington State Cougars.
All right, so Washington State, you were mentioning, and I remember looking at this early on signing day. I want to say it was like by noon they were still at like number 5, and then they finished at number 9. But this class, I mean, for Washington State, looks pretty good. What's your overall take on it? Who kind of stands out the most from this group?
Yeah, so I like it a lot. You know, start from the guys that are already early enrolled. You know, they got the perfect Washington State quarterback, which is Cam Cooper, who's, you know, smooth lefty, who's just smart and makes every throw. And, you know, you think of Mike Leach, they don't really have that guy with a cannon for an arm. You know, Leach always wants that guy who's just smart, protects the football, knows where to go with it, makes quick decisions. Excuse me. That's definitely Cam Cooper. You know, Elite 11 quarterback who I think, again, fits that system. Roderick Fisher is a kid who's, you know, Army All-American, still raw as a receiver, but guy can really run. He's got good size and length, about 6'2", 205. Max Borgie was a kid we bumped up to 4 stars late, kind of a Christian McCaffrey type. And ironically, Stanford made a late run, offered him, tried to get him to flip. They weren't able to. He stuck with Washington State. But he's that, you know, that all-purpose guy in the slot, out of the backfield, returning punts and kicks. And then you look at, you know, the guys, those are all early enrollee guys. They're already there. You look at R.J. Stone is another guy who we bumped up to 4 stars later. Son of former lineman Ron Stone. R.J.'s really good-looking defensive end, 6'4", 215. Khalid Jibril is a guy with an early USC offer, linebacker slash safety. D'Angelo McKenzie as a safety is a pretty good-looking player. Brennan Jackson is a long, lean, athletic defensive end, about 6'4 and 240. You know, Keedron Williams from St. John Bosco is a guy who makes a ton of plays, just a little bit undersized. He's the guy who I think if he's 6'3 and 220 as opposed to being 6 feet and 200, he probably has, you know, 10 more offers. So Patrick Nunn, Amir Cratter from Crenshaw, you know, 6'3, 285, who I think is pretty dang good. So, I mean, top to bottom, you know, I'm looking at this class. I see a lot of difference makers that are really good. That's why I was really surprised to see them at number 9 when literally, like Dave said, I saw them at 5 as late as the day before signing day. That was the last time I checked. So I think Leach and the staff should be really, really happy with the guys they brought in.
Greg, Dave and I cover USC and UCLA, so they're always in on the, you know, 4-star dudes and 5-star dudes and all that stuff. But like when you first start the recruiting cycle, there's a lot of names out there that you've heard of and you're not sure, you know, where they'll end up being. And maybe they're people on the radar early on. It seems like there's a lot of guys here that you've heard of and just maybe for whatever reason, some of the bigger schools weren't on them as hard and Washington State was able to come in and get them. Is that kind of a fair assessment? It seems like there's a lot of dudes that
fair. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, everybody has heard of these guys. Everybody, all the guys I named, you know, Blake McDonald, you know, was an early UCLA commit who we thought was going to end up going to Nebraska. But yeah, every one of these guys is someone who at one point was on everybody's radar. And then, yeah, you know, it's one of those situations where it's not that they weren't good enough. It's just maybe they're the number three guy on a school's board and they took their top two guys, or maybe they were number four. So, I mean, these are all guys that can play. And Washington State has proven to be, you know, again, it's all about developing and finding the scheme that fits. And I think Washington State has proven that they can win a lot of games with maybe players that weren't rated as high because those coaches did such a good job of developing the talent, and that Mike Leach has a really good scheme on both sides of the ball. You know, defensively, they always seem to have a really tough, physical, active, aggressive defense. And so they just do a good job of finding guys that fit. So, yeah, go Cougs.
It's funny because, like, it's about, you know, certainly development, but I think the evaluation part too, where maybe he was third on some of the big, one of the bigger schools board, but maybe he shouldn't have been. Maybe he should have been first, or maybe he should have been, you know, it's interesting because I think they do a really good job of evaluating too, but obviously developing once they get there.
No, that's what I mean by scheme fit. So maybe this guy in, say, USC system wasn't fitting, but if he goes to Washington State and what they do, yeah, he's number one on their board. So, yeah, no, not just developing, but finding guys that fit your scheme. Don't necessarily, I mean, there's the kind of saying, you know, you don't want to squeeze a guy in who maybe doesn't fit. You know, you go for the best players, but what if the guy just doesn't fit? If he's too good, you still take him. I always say, man, take the best football player, but at the end of the day, you got to make sure the guy fits what you want to do. Otherwise, you're going to waste his talent. So what Washington State does really, really well is, you know, they have a system that they've been running forever. And they get guys that are number one on their board. Maybe they might not be number one on somebody else's board, but for Washington State, yeah, they actually absolutely fit what they want to do. And, yeah, that's how they win games.
All right. Well, we'll move on. The number eight class, also number 43 in the nation. And this is also the last of this group of five classes that actually moved down on signing day. So all of these schools that we had mentioned were a little bit higher before signing day and then kind of drop down. But our number eight school is
California Golden Bears.
All right. So overall assessment of this class, I guess for me, I mean, looking at it, you know, Justin Wilcox and that staff he's put together there, I don't know. I was expecting it to be a little bit higher ranked. I was wondering your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I would say it was okay. Again, looking at their class, I'm kind of looking at it as we speak right now. I would probably, I don't know if I would take this class over Washington State's, who it's rated higher than, but there are some players I do like in that class. I like Will Craig a lot. I think he's a natural tackle, got invited to the opening finals, did pretty well there. I think Nico Remigio from Modern Day is a speed guy, an athletic kid who's really strong. One of my big sleepers in the class, and I don't know if you can call him a sleeper anymore, is the tight end from South Lake Tahoe, McKellen Castles. Another guy who we bumped up to four stars the week of signing day. And he's a kid who, again, 6'5 and 230, a basketball player, highly productive. He can run. He tests really well. And you see it on the field. So I do like him a lot. Another early enrollee was a long 6'2 corner, Chigozie Anusiam, a guy that I think we all saw at UCLA's camp. They offered him, and it came out of those two schools. He ended up, you know, choosing Cal. I think he's got a ton of upside because of that length and that athleticism. You know, he's a legitimate 6'2", but he's a fluid 6'2". He's not a stiff, you know, bulky 6'2". He's real lean, so he can move. Chris Brown was a running back on everybody's board, had just an average senior season, really good, productive as a junior, but kind of banged up as a senior. His stock dropped a little bit, but Cal stayed on him and were able to land him. Aaron Maldonado was a guy who UCLA kind of basically dropped. They didn't think he fit their 3-4, and he went ahead and committed to Cal just a few days later. And he had a great senior year. And talking to several players and coaches at Modern Day and St. John Bosco and Servite, who all actually played against Bishop Lamont, they said he was the best D lineman they played against all year. So I think Maldonado's got a chance to be pretty good. So overall, I mean, they still got guys. They still got some dudes who I think can be good. It's just, I thought maybe, you know, Coach Wilcox would have done a little better. You know, they got Peter Sermon in there now, who's known as always been a pretty good recruiter wherever he's been. So we'll see if that combo of Wilcox and Sermon can kind of light some things up. They got hurt a little bit. No quarterback. You know, they lost JT Schrout before the early signing period. He was a longtime Cal guy, Cal commit, and ended up flipping to Tennessee. And then, you know, I think Tui Asisopo went after a few guys, missed on them, and they didn't really, you know, want to reach on a quarterback. So they just decided, hey, we'll just hold the offer for next year, 2019. But no quarterback. But other than that, I think it was a solid class. Not a spectacular one, but I would say solid top to bottom.
What's the kind of buzz about Justin Wilcox? I don't remember him being like the most dynamic recruiter when he was defensive coordinator. And, you know, I know he brought in a couple of head coaches to be his coordinators there, like as a staff. What's the buzz about them as far as being good on the recruiting trail?
Yeah, no, Justin, you know, he's not the most dynamic personality, but, you know, surprisingly, you talk to kids, they all really like him and respect him. You know, you talk to, you know, hey, who's your main recruiter? And they'll actually name him a lot. So I think he's one of those guys, again, a lot of head coaches aren't super involved in it, but he actually is. So he's always kind of been that way. Maybe not at USC, he didn't need to be, but at least with Cal, I've seen him take the lead on a lot of players. And overall, it's a good staff. They have a good support staff as well. They got, you know, guys behind the scenes who actually work pretty hard at it. And I think they'll be better this year. I really do. I think that 8 is going to probably move up, assuming that they, you know, that they're actually – pretty solid on the field. If they are, I could see them having a better recruiting class this coming year.
This Toailoa guy, is he related to the UCLA Toailoas?
I'm sure they are. I'm not trying to be
same basic know. Area, Mount Sac, Walnut, California. It's gotta be, right?
Yeah. No, I'm assuming. I'm assuming. So I don't know if it's cousins or whatnot. It's fun. I can kind of say this because, you know, mom being from Hawaii and have a Polynesian background, things are all related somehow, you know, cousins, second cousins, third uncle, whatever. So I'm sure without getting any backlash for saying that, I think there's probably some distant relative in there as maybe an uncle or a cousin that kind of binds those two together somehow, yeah. Woody.
Sam Tye's cousin. Yeah, I got it.
Nice.
There you go. Everyone, Sam Tye's like the Kevin Bacon, right? Everyone kind of knows, was it five? Something of Kevin Bacon at the same time. Everyone was related to him somehow.
Awesome. Okay, so these all teams from 7 up have moved up a little bit on signing day, or most of them have. So number 7 and number 39 in the country is...
Stanford Cardinal.
All right, so not obviously not the crazy class they signed last year with like 9 5-stars, and like those are the only 9 guys they signed, but... It looks like they didn't have a ton of scholarships to give. They brought in a couple of quarterbacks, both pro-style guys. What's your overall assessment of this class? Do you think they filled the needs they have?
Yeah, like you said, they only have, you know, Stanford's not one of those schools that, you know, they're not going to oversign and force guys out. That's not really their end game. They just, if they have however many graduating seniors they have, that's how many players they bring in. So they only had, you know, a handful of seniors, so they only signed, what, 13 guys or 14? Tanner McKee obviously counts as he'll be a 2020 counter, basically, because he's going on his mission right out of high school.
That's right.
And he's obviously the headliner. Love him. I think he's tremendous. And he's a guy who we'll see, though. You know, I'm always scared about those quarterbacks who go on their missions and come back. All the great BYU quarterbacks, whether it be, you know, the Detmers, Steve Young, I think Coy Detmer went to Colorado, but, you know, Robbie Bosco and Steve Young and all them. They never did missions. You know, obviously Tim McMahon wasn't Mormon or even close to that. But so most of those guys, though, didn't do a mission. And the ones that have gone on their mission, they didn't come back and have the same kind of success.
Ben Olsen.
Ben's a pretty good example of that. So I hope Tanner can pull it off. I hope Tanner comes back in a couple of years. And it's just such a technical position where you take 2 years off and not constantly, you know, taking your reps and facing live bullets and having a defense and having to do all of that stuff that makes you an elite quarterback. It's tough to take 2 years off. If you're a lineman, you can still practice, but if you're a quarterback, it's kind of hard to, you know, in the middle of your, you know, your trip to Greece or wherever you're at to try to, you know, rally 22 guys and say, hey, we go play a quick football game. I need you to run this defense and we're going to run this offense. And, you know, you can't do that. It's kind of hard to do that. So they have Jack West, who is another quarterback they took. You know, he's solid, but Tanner's definitely the headliner. I like Michael Willis a lot. He's big, strong, 6'2", 6'3", receiver. They can kind of get down the field. They always do well nationally. Andres Fox is a big-time defensive end at Alabama, who had most of the SEC after him. Thomas Booker was kind of a surprise for some people. They didn't think he was going to leave the East Coast and Baltimore, Maryland, and come out west to play for Stanford. But Stanford always does a really good job winning those head-to-head battles. Trey Stratford was the center from Allen, Texas. For those who don't know, Allen's kind of like our modern day or our Bosco out here. Allen, Texas is like an elite program. And so he was their really headliner this year in terms of the offensive line and early UCLA commit. He flipped when Stanford offered him. So, I mean, it's a small class, but all these guys can all play. They're all really good football players. So, I mean, I'm sure Stanford wish they could take 20, but they like the guys they did take.
It's strange. Stanford always seems to have small classes. Like, do they never graduate a lot of people or something? I don't know how they keep the numbers up. And it's really only two guys that I saw signed from California. I know they're a national recruiting team, but it just seems like you could get a couple more guys from in-state, I would think.
You would think. And I think typically they do. They sign a bigger class from California. But, yeah, it was interesting. This year the only two guys were Tanner McKee and Michael Wilson. So, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it that – I don't think I've ever seen a disparity this big before.
Yeah, and I think part of it, in terms of the class size, they redshirt a ton of guys up there. Like, they're not typically playing true freshmen, so you're spreading out 85 scholarships over 5 years instead of a lot of these schools, it's over four. And I know for, like, USC, with how many guys leave early after 3 years, you generally have to reload with, like, a 20-plus person class every single cycle. But Stanford, I don't know. I mean, it's probably – I would guess their class size over the last, like, 10 years probably averages only, like, I don't know, 15 to 20 guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I agree with that.
All right, well, let's move up to the top six. This is a team that was number 12 at one point during the day. Got up to number 5, and then they dropped down one more spot. But they finished number 6 and number 36 in the country. We have
Arizona State Sun Devils.
All right, so this class entering signing day was number 12 in the Pac-12, and me, being ignorant fool, talked some crap on Twitter, and then they responded by rising all the way up to number 6. Biggins, you mentioned Antonio Pierce is a big reason for why this class closed so strong. Talk about that and just kind of your headliners from this class.
Yeah, so they had a bunch of what we call kind of silent commitments, and so that's why the class was – we had a film this was going to happen. You know, Merlin Robertson, I think, had a really good, special senior year. For me, he really elevated his game. And if you watch Sarah play at all, he was dominant. Ashari Crosswell as well. You know, Antonio Pearson, he was their best football player this past season. And it wasn't Ashari Crosswell, it was the defensive end, Jermaine Lole. And so I think AP was responsible for all three of those guys who all waited until signing day. And then, you know, Jarrett Bell is a pretty intriguing offensive lineman. Another signing day kid, Jordan Porter, is a wide receiver at Etowando with, you know, a lot of upside. For me, you know, he's a pure speed guy. He's got 6'2" frame that can run. I would love to see him develop a little bit more as a pass catcher, maybe develop a little more fluidity in his movement. But as a straight line guy, he's got a chance. So that was another late signing day guy. So they signed 5 or 6 guys on signing day. Darian Butler, another kid, Antonio Pierce, who was all over. Narbonne High School won a state title. And Darian, you talk to the Narbonne coaches, they'll say he was their best defensive player, not Raymond Scott, who's going to USC. It was Darian Butler was their best defensive player for the last 2 years. So he's just a pure football player. He's stocky, 5'11", 215, 220 pounds, makes a ton of plays. And he also waited until signing day. So these guys were all basically kind of silence, and they kind of just waited until signing day and had that big, nice big splash, and their class jumped from 12 to 5 to 6 or whatever it was. So they finished strong.
The Herm Edwards effect, obviously there's a lot of sound bites that are hilarious, and everyone kind of, you know, jokes about it. At the end of the day, you hire some guys that know how to recruit. You know, I think he'll relate to parents very well, maybe not players as much, but we'll see, you know, how that goes forward. How do you think that first class went for Herm? And do you see some – everyone's kind of predicting doom and gloom. Can you see some positives going forward that maybe this Herm experiment works out?
Yeah, I mean, I think kids are going to like Herm too. I mean, he's a guy who, if you watch the – you know, watch about the Under Armour game, you know, every year, he's always one of the coaches, man. Every time he talks, it's like a, you know, motivational speech. And I think a lot of kids, dude, they love it. They got a kick out of it. And you talk to the kids who took their official trips or had Herman for home visits, they're like, dude, this guy's awesome. Like, he got me jacked up. I was ready to run through a wall. So I think the key for them is going to be, you know, the OC and the DC hires. And the story I heard, whether it's right or wrong, a big reason why Herm was hired was because they wanted to keep the current OC in DC. That was one of the reasons why Kevin Sumlin kind of backed away, because he wasn't going to be told who his OC and DC were going to be. They hired Herm, and then the OC and DC left. So it was kind of like that was the main reason why they wanted to bring him in. So I think, you know, Rob Likens is going to be the OC. And again, that'll be interesting to see how that works, because I think Herm's going to be, you know, that figurehead, that guy, you know, the motivator. Obviously, he'll help out with the game planning. But the OC and the DC are going to be huge moving forward for ASU to see if, you know, the experiment is going to work. And so it's going to be almost as big how those two guys do as opposed to how well Herm does. So I'm as curious as anyone else, for sure. I'm fascinated to see how this whole thing plays out. Maybe we have it all wrong, fellas. Maybe it's all us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just being negative thinkers. See. We gotta be more positive. We need a motivational speech. Man,
I could use a Herm Edwards motivational speech, and to Antonio Pierce is my guy, and so I'm gonna root for them because of AP. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. Maybe they're gonna fool us all.
Yeah. Well, whenever you make Dave look silly on Twitter, I'm gonna give my, you know, tip of the cap.
It's not hard.
To ASU. Herm showed up Dave on signing day on Twitter, which was fun.
Yeah, Herm gave Woody a big finger and said, "Take that, Woody."
That's what he did. That's number exactly five what he did.
Number five in the country, or whatever. Number six in the Pac-12. Yeah. Well, anyways, what's our Utah soundbite?
So number five is so they're 34th in the country. They actually made a big move on signing day as well. And ASU was number five for a while. Then I guess Utah just passed them. But number five is
Utah Utes.
That's an arrow. It's an arrow firing because the Utes are a Native American tribe. So it's kind of problematic, but we're just going to move past it. Utah signed a pretty good class here. Jack Tuttle, you know, being obviously the headliner there. What's your overall take on this one? Is this one of the best Utah classes you can remember of late, or is since they've been in the Pac-12?
Yeah, it's good. It's really good, and I love that staff. I think they do a great job. You know, again, everything I said about Washington State, it kind of applies to Utah. They're that school that can kind of beat your guys. How do I say this correctly? They'll take their players, and they'll beat your guys with probably lesser overall talent just because they coach those guys up and they out scheme you, and they always play so tough and so hard. You really watch Utah play and kind of say, God, Utah didn't play very hard today. Like, you just don't ever say that. They always seem like they come and play. So Jack Tuttle, I'm a big fan of. He's already enrolled, as is Malone Mataele from Santa Margarita. Both those guys already enrolled there. And I think those are two really good football players, Solomon Enos, who decided on Utah on signing day over Penn State, where his famous father, Curtis Enos, was a great running back. Hunter Lotualele, I feel like there's been about a dozen Lotualeles that have gone to Utah. Jackson Cravens, big-time D-tackle. He committed either on signing day or maybe a few days before. That was a nice pickup for them. My most intriguing player is Andrew Mataafa out of San Diego. Missed his whole senior year, but we still upgraded him that week of signing day to four stars, because just kind of going and watching the tape and watching the junior film and looking for upside. And here's a kid who's 6'4", and he's really, really lean at 205, but because he's Polynesian, he's going to be 240 with ease, but he can run and hit. He's aggressive, and he plays angry, and he's going to get coached up like crazy at Utah. So Mataafa is a guy who, if he had played his whole senior year, I guarantee you everybody would have been all over this guy. I think he might have tore his ACL at the USC Rising Stars camp. Ryan, I don't remember that. But this is a good football player. Another kid who's kind of intriguing, is a kid from Australia, Thomas Yasmin.
Yeah.
Actually plays rugby, and I know his kind of one of the guys who kind of handled his recruitment sent me his rugby tape, and the guy runs a 10 900 meters at 6'4 and 230. He doesn't know how to play football, but shoot, man, this guy figures it out. And I plays again a place like Utah, who does a great job of developing. He might be a guy we look back and say, man, this is a great story. The kid didn't even play football, was a rugby player, but when you're 6'4 and 230 and run 10.9, that's a nice building block for sure. So I like what Utah did.
It's interesting because you see that and you're like, oh, is he a kicker or a punter? Like, oh, no, he's an athlete. If that works out, which I don't know, you know, never having played football, if it will, do you think you're going to see more of that happening? I mean, see, like this could be like, you know, Kyle Whittingham opening a new door to getting athletic dudes from other countries that don't necessarily play American football.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's a lot of upside in taking a guy who maybe, you know, you don't have to worry about him playing a lot of 7-on-7, have a bunch of terrible habits, or having a bunch of crazy, you know, little handlers that they have to deal with. And he's a big athlete and no bad habits to break, and he hasn't had a bunch of hits on his head already. And there's there's that concern, especially out here in California, where they're talking about banning tackle football before high school. So here's a kid who has not a lot of wear and tear on his body, and he's just, again, a big, strong athlete. And if you bulk him up, put him at defensive end, shoot, you don't have to. I'm kind of downplaying it a little bit, but you don't have to be, you know, a brain surgeon to figure out, you know, defensive end, go kill the quarterback. Just run around the guy and kill the quarterback. Or, hold your gap. And they're gonna coach him up. They're going to teach him. But, yeah, I think this could definitely open up, you know, places like, you know, not just Australia, but wherever they play, you know, rugby. And I've always been a fan of multi-sport athletes in high school, and I think there's an advantage to that. So I'm all on board for this kid. I hope it works out. I think it'd be great. Great story if it did.
Real quick, too, they also had a lot of in-state talent. It seems like if you look at the list, it's like California, Texas, and Utah. I think they got like a Florida guy and Arizona, a couple, but it seemed like they found some really good talent in state for this class.
Yeah, and I think Utah has, over the last few years, has kind of surpassed Arizona and Washington, Oregon, as maybe the best state out west for talent other than California. I think Utah is really, really good. It's really strong. So you can take 10 guys from Utah every year and fill half your class, and you're going to have 10 studs. Especially linemen, they do a great job in Utah for whatever reason. Of just every year, they have a couple really, really good linemen. So Utah is definitely a place that you want to go and recruit. And their struggle has been keeping those really elite kids away from the bigger schools. When I say bigger, I just mean maybe a bigger name school. But Utah is a great place for homegrown talent for sure.
All right, let's go. So our top four, number four class. It's number 18 in the country, so all of these are top 20 classes from now on. Number four we have
UCLA Bruins.
All right, so UCLA's class pretty much, I mean, from the time Jim Mora was fired to signing day, turned over almost completely with, I think, like three commitments retained from Mora's class to Chip Kelly's. What did you notice about what stood out to you first, and then also what did you notice about the way Chip Kelly recruits and the kind of players he goes after compared to maybe what Mora's staff was doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big difference was, and I think it's really overstated. I've seen everyone kind of talking about it, radio shows, message boards, saying, oh, you know, Chip Kelly doesn't want 5- and 4-star guys. He didn't win with them or need them at Oregon. He purposely went for these guys. I mean, let's just, if we're going to be real, which that's what I'm all about, I mean, it's not like he didn't go after any of those guys, right? I mean, he went after, you know, Gautiote and Solomon Tulipupu, and I mean, he went after a lot of the big-name guys. It wasn't like he just said, you know, I don't want them. It's just he wasn't able to get them. I think what Chip does really, really good, and he always has, is he's got an unbelievable eye for talent, and he quickly can rotate to a backup option, and when you watch that kid, you're going, okay, shoot, this guy is actually really good. You know, I was surprised when I looked at UCLA, some of the sleepers that they brought in, kind of watched the tape, and you're going, dude, who is this kid? You know, I mean, I think Dorian is obviously the headliner. You know, I love the receiver class. Addison, Chase Cota, Michael Ezekiel. I mean, they got a lot of studs. You know, Kyle Phillips, Kyle, these guys are all four stars. So it's not like it's a whole class full of sleepers. But, man, I know Huff, when we watched first off, the John Gaines kid, for me, if he would have been in California, he's a top 10 lineman, top 10 tackle. This guy is really good. Talking to Alan True, who handles the Midwest, he's like, dude, I totally missed on this kid. He goes, this guy is the kid who can go to Wisconsin every year and dominate, and I don't know really how we missed him. And then the Patrick Jolly kid from Florida, you're watching the tape, you're going, dude, this kid's actually really good. Huff watched Rashad Williams, and I watched him, 6'4 corner. You're going, this guy's a really good football player. So it's a whole bunch of guys like that where you're kind of going, Chip knows what he's doing. You know, I think, again, 2019, I think you're going to see him go after, you know, a lot of the top-tier kids, not because they're star rating. You know, he's accurate when he says he doesn't care about stars, but he does care about going after the best football players. We're not trying to brag, but we don't. The way we do rankings is we typically rate the highest players. Those guys get the highest star rating. You know what I'm saying? Not to be condescending, but that's usually how it works. And those are the guys that Chip will go after. But if he doesn't get on those guys, he trusts himself to go and maybe offer a guy without stars, whereas some head coaches or some staff actually are almost kind of like, well, you know, I don't know if we should go on that kid. I mean, they'll deny it, but I guarantee you it's true. There's staffs out there that do care about where their class is going to be rated or where player is going to be rated at, where Chip does not give two craps about that at all. So, and then you go out and watch those guys, and you're like, okay, so we goofed. This guy should have been rated higher. We're the morons. You know, of course, you can't move him up because people can say, oh, you're just doing that because he's going to this school. So you just kind of suck it up and say, okay, we missed on that guy. And then, oh, we missed on that guy too. But I thought UCLA had a really good class. Obviously, offensive line, it was a huge, huge need. I think they did just okay. I think losing Jarrett Patterson was big because I think Jarrett was good and they needed to tackle. You know, getting Chris Murray, you know, that whole debacle, getting him to get to sign was phenomenal. And I think he has a chance to compete right away at either a center or a guard spot. Again, I like the Gaines kid, the Baraka Beckett kid. I think he's got some downward upside. You know, talking to some people who actually coach him, Solomon Tuliapupu's dad, Turnbull, who's works for PTP, told me, dude, this guy is a steal. He's an elite offensive lineman. So talking to the father of a USC Trojan, he trains this kid and loves him. So I heard that from a couple of different people as well. So I think UCLA did pretty good. I think we're going to see this class will probably outperform their ranking, which in years past, the ranking always outperformed their on-field performance. I think it's a nice little reversal there if you're a UCLA fan.
For the future, I think, you know, it's hard for even a high-profile coach like Chip Kelly to come in and then jump in and swap some five-star talent there. But if you look at the five-star, I mean, no one really signed five stars except for USC. Is that something you think Chip Kelly can change? I know he's not doesn't care about the rankings, but he's not going to be contrarian, like you said, and just not go after the guys that everyone thinks are the best. He'll still go after the guys he thinks are the best. And a lot of the times, like you said, it'll probably be the guys that you think, you know, the 247 does too. Can he do that? Can he get in and get some of those five-star talent that maybe USC would normally get?
Yeah, no doubt. And look at the top 12, and you're probably skipping ahead, but look at 2019 rankings. I mean, Kayvon Thibodeau, Henry Toto from De La Salle, Brew McCoy, Fatui Tuatelli from Hawaii, Austin Jones, Gabe Floyd, those are all Kyle Ford. Those are all going to be high four-star or five-star talents. And UCLA is going to be all over those guys. So, you know, don't think, okay, five stars. Okay. UCLA is going to not want those guys because they're rated too highly, but show me the three stars. That's not going to happen at all. Do I think Chip can get them? Absolutely. You know, why not? I mean, he's got a good staff that's going to be aggressive, and you assume they're going to probably win some games in the field, and there's no reason why they can't go in and compete, you know, head-to-head with USC, and I think Washington's becoming a recruiting monster. I think Oregon's going to always recruit well. Stanford's always the toughest probably the school to beat head-to-head. So I don't see any reason why they can't win a couple of those head-to-head battles and get a five-star or two. But again, like you said, it's not going to be the, you know, it's not going to kill him if he doesn't, but those are the guys that he will target for sure, 100%.
So you're basically saying that, assuming that UCLA's staff isn't going to go on vacation for about 6 months, like right now, right?
I am assuming that. We are going to assume that they will not do that. And if they don't, they have a chance to get these guys. And if they win some games. So I think the plan for success is don't vacation for too long and win in the field. That's probably the recipe for success.
All right. I think
not a bad recipe.
We have three teams left, and I know you got to go really soon. So we'll try. So I feel bad because, you know, we got Oregon. This is number three team, and
Oregon,
it's 16
Washington,
in the country.
USC.
Yeah. So our number, it's number
and
three
that's
in the conference.
If you guys hear a yelp, I just killed my Yorkie.
Nice.
So if you guys hear that loud.
But
it's
number
okay,
six,
he deserves it.
Number 16 nationally, number three in the Pac-12.
Oregon Ducks.
All right, this class was shaping up to be super elite up until the Willie Taggart departure. And then it looks like Mario Cristobal did a pretty nice job holding things together and maintaining a pretty awesome class. What was your overall take on it? Who do you think stood out?
Yeah, no, I think receiver-wise, they had a chance to have a really special class. I think that's where they got really stung. Devin Williams never committed, but he was basically kind of a silent for a long time. Michael Ezekiel was a commit for a while. Miles Battle was a commit. So they lost all three of those guys right around signing day. Penei Sewell was probably the headliner. They did beat out, you know, USC, Alabama, and Utah for him, which is huge. You know, Cristobal had a great relationship with him. You know, Jalen Hall is a receiver with some upside. 6'4", 190, you know, the thing I kept saying, you know, did he peak early? You know, he was really, really good as a sophomore. If he can kind of get that eye of the tiger back, I think he's got a chance. I really like the DB, Steve Stevens and Javon Holland a lot. I think Adrian Jackson is a really good football player. I like Isaiah Crocker a lot. I like Spencer Webb a lot. Tyler Shuck, the quarterback, Elite 11 guy, I think fits with getting what they want to do. So my sleeper probably would be like a Travis Dye, who had a really good explosive senior year. And I think he fits what they want to do. So overall, really good class. Could have been better, but still, shoot, I don't think they're going to complain about having a top 15 class every single year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the top five class that it kind of started off as, but, you know, Cristobal was known as a really good recruiter there. I'm curious to see what he does going forward. But I think they're going to continue to have top 20 classes there at Oregon.
And it was never going to be top five with Taggart. Schools that jumped up, the Notre Dames, the Alabamas, the Texas, the Ohio States, those, they were always going to overtake them at some point. It's just at the time, you know, when they were, you know, top five in the country, most of those schools didn't even have half their class filled up. So, you know, I've seen the narrative about how they went from having the number one class in the country and what could have been. It was never going to finish that way. It's kind of nice to say that, but it was going to be a good class. Probably could have been maybe right around that top 10 if they could have kept Ezekiel and Battle and Devin Williams maybe. But still, I mean, great class for sure. They did a really nice job.
Really quick, is it getting to the point where Oregon, kind of these kids are growing up and like remembering Oregon being super elite under Chip Kelly and like, you know, them having like kind of that cool thing that, you know, a lot of kids in L.A., they always have that with USC. But is Oregon, for some of these kids, was it like, you know, growing up, they knew about them as like an elite school? Is it starting to have an effect like that?
It is, for sure. I've heard that a ton. You know, I've heard, you know, a lot of players. And again, UCLA actually benefited. Casimir Allen said, I grew up watching DeAnthony Thomas. That's who I wanted to be like. And he ended up going to Chip Kelly because Chip was the guy in that offense. So, no, you're definitely hearing that buzz. It's funny. I still hear people saying, I grew up Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart. But yeah, you're definitely starting to hear people talk about Oregon and the uniforms and locker rooms and those fast paced, you know, offenses, Marcus Mariota and DAT and that whole group. That's definitely helping them right now for sure.
All right, the number two team in the Pac-12 and 13 overall,
Washington Huskies.
All right, Washington starting to recruit like, you know, an elite team should. Number 13 class in the country. Signed a couple of quarterbacks. What's your overall take on this class?
Love it. Great staff. They do a great job identifying pure football players. Yankoff and Sermon are the two quarterbacks, both already enrolled. I love Marquis Spiker. Brandon Cajo is the number one or number two linebacker in the country. For me, Julius Irving has a chance to be really, really good. I like Kyler Gordon. Sam Taimani, a big-time offensive lineman, plays guard. Draco Bynum, I think, has got a chance to be a really good defensive end. Mateo Mele is a huge upside kid. I mean, you're kind of just looking top to bottom of with this class. They signed a nice blend of skill guys with a nice blend of offensive linemen and defensive linemen, getting the late flip. I'm going to say it slowly. Tuli Gassanoa from De La Salle. I think I did that name okay.
That was great.
Yeah, that was good.
Getting him to flip late was pretty big. He was banged up a lot as a senior. You never really saw the true Tuli Gassanoa that we saw as a sophomore when he was dominant. He's banged up the last 2 years. But when he's healthy, he is one of the best pure nose guards you'll see. And again, in Washington system, they kind of run that kind of a hybrid type. But they actually use a nose guard. And he really fits that system well. So if he's healthy, he's going to be really, really good. They obviously do a great job of coaching those kids up too. So I think Washington had a great class.
All right. I know you got to go, so we probably should do the last one.
Sure.
Is there anything else you want on Washington, Dave?
Well, I was wondering really quick. You talked about Chip Kelly being kind of ability to kind of go after those three stars and turn them into players. And, you know, you look at them. That's often been something said about Chris Peterson too. Is any of the sleepers in this class, any of the three stars in this class that really stand out to you?
Yeah, no, I think Jacob Bynum was one of them. I think he's a guy who's probably going to outperform, you know, his current ranking. I'm not sure if we have Kyler Gordon as a three or four or not, but I know he's a guy that Huff has liked quite a bit for a long time. Who else? Richard Newton, for me, I think is an elite running back. I think we have him as a three, but I think he has a chance to be a really good running back. And, again, size and speed and kind of toughness. He's that long 6'1", pushing 6'2", 185 kid, who I think, again, had all the tools to be really, really good at that next level. So if looking for that three guy who I think could blow up, probably Richard Newton would be the guy for me.
All right, and then number one in the Pac-12, four in the country, we have
USC Trojans.
All right, so USC didn't sign a full class, but still ended up with the number one class in the Pac-12, 4 5-stars. I mean, it's almost like who doesn't stand out in this class to you, Greg?
No, I mean, it's crazy how every year they just close like no other. I think they went 5 for 6 this year. I think last year they went something like 5 for 5. The only guy they missed on was Ezekiel, but they hit on every other guy that was kind of, you know, on the fence. Devin Williams was a guy we thought could go to Oregon. They signed both their key DBs, Elijah Griffin, who I absolutely love, and also Isaac Taylor Stewart. Those were closer battles than people really knew. Getting JT to reclassify was huge. I think he's got a chance to be, you know, special for sure. It's number one class for a reason. All those guys are good. They just do a good job. They know what they're doing. They got a great support staff. They got, you know, a bunch of really hard working grinders. And I've always said this about USC is, you know, they could get by kind of maybe just saying, hey, you know, our name recruits itself, but they don't. I mean, Johnny Nansen signed, you know, one of the better linebacker classes that you're going to see. I think 5 or 6 guys. Elijah Winston was a late flip. They got Tulia Pupu on signing day. Gautiote for me. I know 24/7 has Kaho number one, but I still have to go with Pilot Eas as my number one guy. I think they're both really good. But, you know, Raymond Scott, that great, really good linebacker class. And then, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown is just the most tough, competitive a guy you look at, and he's not hyper-athletic. He's not over 6 feet. He's just a guy who just competes so dang hard, and he knows how to play the game. In terms of, you know, he's an NFL route runner right now. He's got incredible hands, instincts are off the charts, and he just plays so hard. And I think I see him. They kind of knock on USC receiver wise. People were saying, hey, you have to kind of wait your turn. He's not going to wait his turn. He will play next year. He's going to get significant reps. He's too good not to see the field right away. So, I mean, top to bottom, you know, really good job by USC. And you can't say really anything negative about the class. I just think it's really good.
Well, Greg, they did bring in Liam Douglas. He was a 3-star. So I don't know how they brought a 3-star guy in with all these other guys. But you look, I mean, they have 1 3-star. And the rest of the conference has at least double-digit 3-stars. Like, is that? I don't think that can continue something like that, right?
Yeah, and watch Liam Douglas. Watch him end up being like an All-American. I mean, that's usually kind of how it is. I mean, Tony Mbusu was like a throw-in. I remember when they took him. I remember because T. Martin told me. He goes, dude, I love this kid. And people were kind of, you know, saying, oh, why'd they take this guy? And he was probably their best player last year, right? I mean, the guy was great. He was a three-star at Narbonne. So, yeah, it's I don't know if it can continue. But look at the 2019 class right now, and they probably lead for Kayvon Thibodeau, Brew McCoy, Chris Steele, who you can make a case are, you know, the top three players in Southern California in the 19 class. I think, I just think USC, they got to win games. If they continue to win games on the field, they're going to have another great recruiting year.
Well, that's Greg Biggins. Greg, we probably got to let you go, right? You got to pay the federal government for something?
I think I'm getting money back this year. I'm actually driving now as we speak to my account, but I think I'm actually going to get money back. So I'm actually, that's why I decided to go ahead and make this appointment rather than wait till April 14th and get it done then. So,
yeah, you want to do that quick.
Fingers crossed, guys. Let's hope.
Let's keep the dream alive.
Nice.
I know I deserve it. Keep hope alive.
Awesome.
But thanks for having me on, fellas. It was fun. We need to
do this
Greg. Again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, fellas. Love you guys.
Thanks so much, Greg.
God bless you all. Yep.
Well, that was a really interesting conversation, Dave. Greg does an amazing job and breaking down every class in the Pac-12, I think, was very helpful. Hopefully the people enjoyed that. We wanted him to answer some of the Twitter questions that came in, but he was in the car by the time we finished, and he's going to get his taxes done. So we'll do our best to answer those questions ourselves.
Yeah, I think we should. And I think we should also touch on the elephant in the room, which is us recording an ad just before we started talking to Greg Biggins, which I don't think it had enough time to breathe when we went to Biggins. But we're one of those podcasts now.
Well, that,
everybody out there.
That's a sign of success, Dave, that someone, you know, that they want to advertise with us. So we can no longer say we are running a negative budget here on the podcast. We actually we made a couple of bucks. So
yeah, woo-hoo! now people are at least like implicitly paying to listen to this, right? Because
yes.
they have to pay with their time listening to an ad.
Right.
So now they actually can say, you know, as much as I paid you, you guys should be recording this better.
60 seconds worth of fun there. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Well, I guess should we start jumping into some of these Twitter questions?
Let's do it.
We had one from Bruin Time Boys. This is Logan White. Looking forward to the 2019 class, what do you think are the strengths and weaknesses of the class in terms of the different positions? Also, who do you think is poised to have a better year in the Pac-12 recruiting in 19 as opposed to 2018? So I think just in general, that's what Logan's looking for here. What do you think?
I know Huffman and Biggins have both said that the 2019 class is pretty much in a lot of ways superior to the 2018 class. I mean, I would think that Arizona would be poised to do better than they did this past class, simply because Kevin Sumlin will have a full year to recruit. But I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it wasn't like a great like running back year. I think nationally, offensive lineman wasn't amazing. I think there's a bunch of positions where it's going to be better in 2019. Greg already mentioned a couple of like there's some high profile names. Thibodeau and McCoy and a bunch of those guys. So, I think, you know, it's spread out a little bit differently, but I think there's some positions in the 2019 class that are going to be a little bit better. I agree with Arizona. I think Kevin Sumlin's really going to kill it on the recruiting trail. I'm a Kevin Sumlin fan. I think he's going to do a lot of good things. So I expect that to kind of go forward. I'm not sure. I don't know if Arizona State's going to do as well. But, you know, we'll see. They had that flurry at the end. There's definitely some buzz. I'm curious if they come back down to earth and how much what you see on the field is going to impact that. I think UCLA with Chip Kelly, I think he will get into some of the higher ranked players in Southern California and have some head to head battles with Clay Helton and USC and. I think like, you know, Oregon State, there's some chance to move up there. We'll see, you know, everyone else kind of going forward, but I think the biggest mover would probably be Arizona.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm trying to think if any of these other ones are better for us or for Biggins. So Arizona 2FL asked about Herm Edwards and his message, which Biggins covered. So Dom Isillo, D-O-M-I-C-I-L-L-O, 11, asks, what was the most interesting or important trend in Pac-12 recruiting this year? Also, which new coach did the best recruiting job relative to expectations situation? What do you think?
I think Herm Edwards probably did the best as far as expectations were nil, right? So I would say, moving up to, the top half of the conference, I would say he moved up there. Important trend. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's the Kyle Whittingham going out and getting an athlete that plays rugby. There have already been, several players coming out of New Zealand and Australia, but mostly kickers and punters. And we've seen Kyle Whittingham be able to do that. He always has great special teams guys, but if you can find some crazy pass rusher that plays rugby in Australia, that would be a really interesting trend.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome.
And what do you think? Any,
No, I think that's pretty much right. I think it would be really cool if suddenly there's a pipeline to Australia for things other than punters. I think that would be a lot of fun. But I think that's about right.
And then Jason_Frey, he had two-parter. Do you expect UCLA to hit the Hawaiian Islands hard in the cycle, given Chip Kelly's former ties with Oregon? And are there any linebackers or offensive linemen that UCLA currently leads for in the 2019 class?
Jason, I do think UCLA is going to hit Hawaii pretty hard. I think, in the past they've obviously recruited the islands, but I think there's an element where there's going to be more mutual interest now, because for so many in Hawaii, with the Marcus Mariota stuff and everything in Oregon, I think Chip Kelly's going to be more of an enticing draw than Jim Mora really ever was. And, doubling up on that answer, there's a pair of Hawaiian offensive linemen who I think UCLA will have a decent chance with, who are both four-star guys, Julius Bulo and Enoch Vimahi. I don't know. Whatever.
Sure.
They're both four-star guys, four-star tackles. Bulo, I think, camped with UCLA last year, and he was one of those guys who's a big fan of Oregon and Chip Kelly. So those are a couple of guys. And I think it's generally a stronger offensive line class in the West next year, as Brian was mentioning earlier. And there's a bunch of guys that, UCLA is going to be in the mix for. They'll have to compete with the usual suspects, USC, Washington, Stanford, for a bunch of these guys. But I think they're obviously going to do better next year than they did this year. I think they were getting on a lot of guys late. And, the Mora era was trending down, obviously, to a lot of people, so it wasn't necessarily an enticing draw. But if, Chip Kelly puts together a decent enough season, and, people are going to see there's plenty of playing time, because UCLA has, 10 scholarship linemen next year, they'll get their fair share of guys.
This one might have to be for Greg, but we can take a shot at it. I_am_Seahawk. Which Pac-12 team recruited the best offensive line, defensive line prospects? Maybe Washington. USC didn't bring that many in. They had a big class last year. I don't know. Any thoughts on who got the best linemen? I haven't looked through enough of them to know.
Yeah, I don't really have good thoughts on it, so that would probably be a better Biggins question. And so, we'll follow up with Biggins and basically have him answer these, on Twitter if he's able to.
Yeah. There was also an interesting exchange on Twitter with, I think it was an Arizona State fan, Joe Whitener or something like that. It was kind of controlling our mentions for a while. I don't know if you want to recap that at all.
Oh, God, no. It was this insane long thread that just went on and on and on and on, and I don't even remember where it started. I think it started with me. As all things do, it started with me being an ignorant fool and making some comment about ASU, but then it just turned into this, insane long thread, and I regret everything. So, I want no part of speaking about that ever again.
Okay. Well, I guess we should go to the email questions then.
Email questions. I think we've actually got a decent amount.
Oh, okay.
So I think this John from Brea question is relatively new. Hi, Dave and Ryan. Question one, were you bursting with Pac-12 pride after watching the Super Bowl?
Sure. I mean, there was a lot of Pac-12 representation there. Stanford had the most players of anybody. And then, you know, having, you know, guys like Nick Foles be, you know, heroes of the game, a bunch of Pac-12 guys. So, I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. And then question two. As a graduate of ASU, I still can't believe that Herm Edwards is the Sun Devil head coach. Have you ever seen the internet trick of taking a paperclip and trading up with people one object at a time until you eventually have a house? I think ASU did that in reverse. They started with Frank Cush, abusive players notwithstanding, and have continually traded down until they finally ended up with Herm Edwards. And does having an ex-agent as an AD who says he wants to run the football program like a professional team set off any alarms at the NCAA? Thank you for your endlessly entertaining and incredibly informative podcast, John in Brea. Yeah, So my whole thing on the Herm Edwards thing, and you know, I'll stop. Well, I'm not going to stop, but I'll stop hitting it quite as hard until the season starts and we actually see what it looks like on the field. But I don't care what he says. Like, I don't care about all the soundbite stuff. It doesn't matter to me. As a hire, like, judging off of record and judging off his actual performance, it doesn't pass any kind of smell test. It doesn't make sense for a program like ASU to make that kind of decision. Like, if a Coastal Carolina wants to hire a CEO to be their football coach, or if some random school who has no buzz whatsoever wants to hire Herm Edwards, who's last coached 11 years ago and wasn't good when he was, that's one thing. But for ASU to do that, when that program actually has a little bit of a tradition, has a little bit of a history, and is in a Power 5 conference, and as early as next year could be back competing for the Pac-12 South, it just, I don't know. It struck me as crazy. Whatever was going on with, you know, having his agent, his ex-agent be the AD and hiring him. I mean, it's just a lot doesn't like smell quite right with it, but whatever. I think that's a fine analogy. The trading up, trading down.
I want to see that. How hard you can get with a paperclip and get to a house. I like that, John.
That'd
always
be fun.
Always some interesting stuff there. Let's see. So we're going, that was the oldest one. Are we doing, or was there more old, there were older ones?
That was the oldest one. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we've got James's questions, which were for Biggins.
Oh crap. Okay. You want me to read them and then
we can see if we can answer any of them.
Okay. These questions are from Tracy Pearson's avatar picture on the Peristyle. Okay.
What? I know this guy. He has a picture of Tracy as his avatar image.
Oh, okay.
He's a poster on your website.
There's like two people that have Tracy's picture on their avatar, which I don't understand. I never really like asked. I don't.
One might say they're crazy obsessed.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Tracy's avatar is now emailing us. So thanks, Tracy's avatar from the Peristyle. So he has four questions, but he numbers them 1, 2, 3, and 3. So 3 is twice. I don't know. Whatever. I'll read them off. Why does 24/7 use ESECPNs in its composite rankings? It's poo-poo and taints and pollutes the pool. Then you have to have scouts like you play the role of Bill Murray and clean the poo-poo and Baby Ruth that they do in the pool. I'm wondering if alcohol was involved when he emailed this, but
that was something else. I mean, the reason they use it, I think, is a fine theory, which is the more data you have, the more accurate your composite's going to be. But I agree. I think ESPN doesn't do their due diligence with their rankings. They rarely do anything out west. They basically do all their evaluations based off a couple of camps and probably don't have the manpower to really actually be doing full national rankings like they purport to doing. So it's probably 247 is now limited because there are only like three services really making up their composite rankings, I think, now, or maybe it's four. But they kind of have to, you know, use as much data as they can. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think they could maybe drop ESPN and that would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, really, with Scout being gone, they were going to have, you know, that's an extra ranking that's out of the loop now. So it does make it a little bit harder. And I do agree that the rankings are ESPN or poo-poo, to put it, you know, Bill Murray, whatever, all that stuff. But yeah, it's not very good. I mean, Greg Biggins used to work for them. And I think it was Darius Rogers who ended up, you know, from Carson or whatever, and he ended up going to USC. And like he was trying to do an evaluation, and he said the people back east didn't even want to listen to him. They're like, no, they had him like, he wasn't even like a top 100 wide receiver for ESPN, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, what? And it just, if it's a guy that's going to play in the SEC, if it's a guy that's going to play in the Under Armour All-American game, they're going to get a higher ranking. If someone's going to the Army Bowl, they're not going to get the highest, you know, ranking. It's just, and like Dave said, they just don't rank the West Coast very well. So, yeah, so I agree. Number two, do you think they will keep the early signing period or push up the dates for early signing period so it doesn't get in the way of the end of the season and bowls?
I don't know any information. I think they should, but I don't know. And I don't know if Biggins would know, but we can certainly direct that question to him.
Yeah, I don't think he knows either. I would prefer it to be moved up also. I think they're going to make adjustments. You know, we're already going to see spring, official visits. So that'll be a nice change. But everyone's got to get your stuff all in order now, even earlier. And I think at that point, when you're visiting then, it would be nice to have a signing period kind of soon after that, similar to what they do. A lot of visits happen in January, and then you sign in February. So,
yep.
The first number three, when is CSUF going to bring back football? Cal State Fullerton?
Cal State Fullerton, the alma mater of the great Greg Biggins.
Yes, that's true. Gerard Martinez went there as well, my recruiting guy. So,
wow.
A couple of recruiting powers in a
couple
of
luminaries.
They were desperate. Yeah, I think Gerard went to USC for like a semester and was like, it was too expensive, so he went to Fullerton after that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. But that's the other thing Greg tweets about a lot. He does like talk about Fullerton baseball. And then who is more of a fan of the teams they report on? Braz Tracy Pearson or Puppy Report Ruth Robbins? Thanks in advance. That's from Tracy Pearson's avatar pick on the P.
I think Tracy Pearson's avatar pick has a few hangups here.
There's a couple.
Who's Puppy Report Ruth Robbins? That's what I want to know.
She used to be with 247. She used to be like with Rivals back in the day. So that's Real Dog, I think it is. Like it's a Washington site.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All
so
right.
I don't know. I haven't seen her stuff for a while, but it used to be, you know, back in the day, I used to see it more. But we got the Dog Man on our network now. So they were on Scout. I think when merged over, there was Real Dog was still there, but Dog Man took over. So Dog Man's the 247 site now, I believe.
Okay.
I believe
the more
so.
You know, the more you know.
Yeah.
All right.
Should we go to James?
Yeah, I'll read James. Hey, Ryan and Dave. Pundits seem to think Arizona will be good next year, and I just don't see it. Number one, Khalil Tate is not a good QB. He's a system QB. Khalil Tate fit Rich Rod's QB run system perfectly, just like Pat White and Denard Robinson, who were moved to wide receiver in the NFL. They were athletes first, QBs second, just like Tate. Kevin Sumlin and Noel Mazzone do not run the kind of offensive system that Tate can succeed in. Disagree strongly. I do think that he fit a lot of what Rich Rod liked to do in his run system, but the thing that really stood out if you were actually watching Tate this year is he can throw the ball too. He was actually a pretty darn good downfield passer. Now, I don't know if he was super polished on the short stuff. I think he threw those like they were lasers and you needed to throw a little bit more touch, but I don't think he's like Pat White and Denard Robinson. I think he's a little bit more polished as a thrower. The other area I disagree is Noel Mazzone's shown an ability to adapt to a variety of quarterbacks over time. I mean, he was the same guy who turned Brock Osweiler into an NFL quarterback and then turned around and, you know, helped develop Brett Hundley into an NFL quarterback. So, and those are two guys who are very, very different as players. It's not going to be a pure run-first system. but I don't think Rich Rod's is necessarily a pure run first system. I think that's kind of what they fell into, but I don't think that's necessarily what it completely was by the end there. So, yeah, I think he can absolutely succeed in it.
I do
any
too.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, if I'm not mistaken, Tate had five like long touchdown passes in the bowl game. So
yeah.
He's shown that he can score a whole bunch of running touchdowns if you have to, or throw it too. So I'm not going to count out, you know, Khalil Tate and Kevin Sumlin. To me, it makes sense. You know, maybe you end up being right, James, but I think it'll work.
And then as second reason why they won't be good, Marcell Yates is not a good DC. He's been at Arizona 2 years, and the defense has given up 30 points per game both seasons. Now, we're not going to do – look, we're going to elevate the discourse here, my man. What's your name? James. We're going to elevate the discourse, and we're not going to look at points per game as if that has any value in this new world where we can adjust for pace and all these different things. So instead, we're going to look at S&P Plus defensive ratings. All right? So we're going to look at some advanced stats that – adjust for all sorts of cool stuff.
Dave's good at this stuff. Dave
knows
this stuff.
Namely pace. So let's pull this up. So Arizona this year was 115th in defensive S&P Plus. So pretty bad. Yeah, not great. And then last year they were 105th. So they're definitely trending downward. So you've got that going for you. So Marcell Yates, yeah, probably not a good DC. Third reason, Rich Rod was a horrific recruiter. Let's take the OL as an example. Arizona only has 8 scholarship OL returning from last year's team, the fewest in the Pac-12. And of those 8 players, only 4 of them had other Power 5 offers coming out of high school. This roster is neither talented nor deep. It is loaded with former walk-ons, JUCO transfers, and tons of 2-star scrubs. I actually think Sumlin is a decent coach, but he will not win at Arizona until he gets a pro-style QB and has a couple decent recruiting classes under his belt. So can we put a stop to the narrative that Arizona has a chance to compete for the Pac-12 South next year? They don't. Love the podcast, James.
Interesting, James. I mean, there's a lot of young talent, I think, on the defensive side of the ball. And you know, the 2-deep was just full of young players. I like Kevin Sumlin, what he's been able to do as a developer. I think he can work with what he's got there, but, you know, James doesn't think so. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know that next year's I don't know if they're going to be winning the South next year, but I think they return a ton of production. I think they return like 75% of their production or something like that from last year. So I don't think they're losing a whole lot, and they weren't horrible this year. I think a lot will depend on how Khalil Tate does fit in that offensive scheme, but I think they could be – I think they could be reasonably good next year, and if you know, if USC takes a major step back with Sam Darnold gone, UCLA doesn't break through in Chip Kelly's first year, Arizona State doesn't put it together despite also returning a bunch of guys under Herm Edwards for whatever reason, and Utah, you know, just has a typical Utah season instead of, you know, being a lot better next year. I mean, I think Arizona will be in the mix. I don't think anybody's picking him as a favorite in the South next year. I think everyone's just saying, you know, if things break right, there's a chance. And I don't think that can be discounted by anything you said here.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely more of a sleeper team, a team to watch out for, you know, that could do some things. You know, James certainly doesn't see it. I don't know. You might not be in right, James, but I just kind of sometimes just get a feeling, you know, and I just get a feeling with someone coming in there that some good things could happen, that they'll make it interesting. Maybe they beat a team or two that they shouldn't, and, you know, probably lose some games that they should have won. But I think they could at least make some noise in the South.
Yep.
Should we go Hithloday?
Let's do it.
Great show last week. Thank you, Hithloday. It was all inspired by you. I thought that that was quality interviewing work to keep Cartman focused and to get Shear to open up. Follow up on the Arizona schools. Both your guests reported that the in-state talent pool has gone way up in the last 20 years, but neither school has succeeded in building a fence around it. I've heard it suggested from some quarters that this reflects the housing boom in the Sun Belt, families moving from high population areas out of state to the Arizona exurbs. Is that like a term, exurbs?
Yep.
and bringing their football talent with them, but there's no quote-unquote organic roots for those kids who, as transplants, didn't really grow up rooting for ASU or U of A. What do you make of that theory and the future of those schools recruiting?
So that would be probably a more specifically answered question by either of our Arizona guys, but from what I know, there's definitely an element of that. A lot of these guys are not necessarily kids of people who've, you know, kind of grown up in the area, as it is with, you know, Southern California. I mean, by and large, the players in Southern California, their parents grew up either by and large rooting for USC or, you know, a smaller percentage, but certainly a substantial amount rooting for UCLA. And yeah, there'll be others throughout that group, but there's more of a native population. I think Arizona does have more of that kind of element of people moving in and not necessarily having roots there. And then I think it's just, I don't know. I think for some of those kids, there's not as much. I think there's more the option of going to, like, so if you're an elite Arizona kid, the option of going to LA for school or staying in Phoenix or Tucson or whatever it is, I think it, I don't know, maybe plays a little bit better, or going to Texas. You know, a lot of these guys end up going to Texas for school, either A&M or UT or whatever. And I think both of those being relatively close and being like, maybe, you know, feel a little bit more like, I don't know, I don't want to knock Arizona at all, but feel more like maybe big city options. I could see that playing a role for some of these kids.
You know, Greg talked about a little bit too, that even if you were at ASU or Arizona and could build a wall around the state and keep as many the local guys home, it wouldn't be enough to like support your whole program. So, you know, maybe one, you know, Herm or Kevin Sumlin can get there and do that. But even if they did, you're still going to have to recruit heavily in California. And if you know, like Sumlin has Texas ties, he'll probably still recruit heavily in Texas. And Arizona is like, I think it's a pretty good spot to get kind of suck some guys in from both states there. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. What's the exurbs? What is that? Is it like a suburb sort of thing, or?
Yeah, it's basically like a suburb. It's like it's further out than suburbs.
Okay.
It can be kind of a prosperous area beyond the suburbs. Like Phoenix has a lot of exurbs. Like what's some of the names? I'm blanking on all of them, but there's, you know, they're probably within about 30 miles of Phoenix, but
gotcha,
they're just kind of, yeah, you know, commuter enclaves of people who come into the city.
Yeah, there's certainly, I mean, there was the huge housing boom and then all that kind of crashed, but there's still a lot of people that move there. There's people that are seasonal in Arizona too, you know, you get a lot of that. But I think you get some success though, and you can build that up. And you know, either one of these coaches, there's enough name recognition there that if they, you know, got put a couple winning seasons together, you know, you get kids growing up like, hey, I want to do that too. So I wouldn't discount it completely, but I see what he's saying.
Yeah, for sure. Anthony, hi, Ryan and Dave. Would you watch a Pac-12 basketball game if Bill Walton is part of the broadcast? Not only would I do regularly, because for whatever reason, I still watch UCLA basketball games.
I don't watch a lot, but it seems when I do, he's the guy. So, I don't know. I'm just not watching much college basketball anymore, but it seems when I have to watch like a USC game for some reason, he's the guy calling the game. So,
I'd listen to him call anything. I watched him during the, I think it was the Super Bowl or the national championship game last year, whatever it was, where he was in the like fun room on ESPN. You know how they do those different like viewing experiences for the games. And when I just kind of don't care about the game, I'll watch one of those things. And he was fun. I would listen to him call anything. He's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. There's sometimes he just goes on these weird, like he'll just argue something and you're like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
But no, but I love it. I love every bit of it. I love the like acid trippy, like, oh, this doesn't make any sense, because sometimes there's an inherent logic to it, which is great. And then sometimes like he's so clearly like just trolling really hard and people can't wrap their heads around it a little bit, because they're like, oh, this basketball legend is just doing basically performance art on a national broadcast. This is weird. And that's all it is. And people just can't get it. And it's phenomenal. I love every bit of it.
There's stuff, he'll just argue something like, it's like something pops into his head. like I'm just making this up. Like someone shoots at the basket, the ball gets stuck, between the rim and the backboard, happens sometimes. And he would just come up with a thing like, why do they even have backboards at all? Just get rid of them all. And you're just looking at him like, well, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But then he'll just like harp on it and just whatever. He just decided something in that second and then we'll argue it like to the death. And it's kind of funny. You're like, okay, I don't quite get that, but.
He's incredible. He's incredible. I legitimately think the man's a genius. Like some of the things he says, and it sounds just absurd, and then he'll keep talking about it. I'm like, maybe I'm just like getting a contact acid high, but this is starting to make some sense to me. And it's phenomenal every time.
I think we have one more from Bernie. Is that the last one?
I think so.
Okay. Now that the 2018 football recruiting is over and we see how the classes were rated by stars, how would you rate all the Pac-12 coaches when it comes to stars? And how would you rate, say, Shaw at Stanford or Peterson at Washington? Would you give them a 3, 4, or 5 star? I would be interested in your response. That's kind of hard because stars are like a lot about potential and stuff too, right? Like,
yeah, but so this is good because it's like a categorization system, right? Because we can basically throw these guys into categories, like,
okay,
which are the 5-star coaches, which are the 4-star coaches, so on and so forth, right?
Yeah. And it's and hard, I guess there's like a but you there's can, five you, new you ones,
can,
you know?
So yeah, you can fold potential into it, and the potential might be based on their situation a little bit, but I think this makes some sense.
Okay. Do you want to – so, okay, so who are the 5-star coaches? Shaw, Peterson?
Shaw. I might give Shaw like a high 4-star.
Ooh, you're not even giving Shaw like a 5-star?
He's like a composite 4-star who's like a 5-star in one ranking system.
Okay.
He has there's just a few too many like in-game decisions that just kind of limit him, I think. I think as a program builder, obvious 5-star, as a planner and all these other like organizational logistical things, like he's great. I just think that little bit of in-game tomfoolery on occasion just kind of rubs me wrong. But I'd give him a high 4-star. You're going 5-star with Shaw?
No, I'll agree with you. I think Peterson's probably a consensus 5-star, no?
Yeah, Peterson's a consensus 5-star, top 10 recruit in the country, that sort of deal.
Okay. Anyone else compete? Is like Chip Kelly a 5-star?
I think I'd give Chip Kelly the 5-star, largely based on that Oregon situation and also his potential at UCLA, which is a potentially better recruiting power than Oregon. So I'd probably give him the 5-star. Maybe not consensus. Maybe he's a 4-star in some rankings, but I'd give him a 5-star.
Okay. That's fine. So, yeah. I would put probably right now. Yeah, okay. So him and Shaw are like about the same level.
Sure.
Where would you put Sumlin? 4? I got to give him 4, I would say.
Yeah, I'd give him a 4-star. Okay. 4-star. Solid 4-star. I'd give...
would you do Clay Helton 4-star?
Clay Helton's a high 3-star for me.
Okay.
But I think he's... I think he's a solid 3-star, solid, 5-year player, redshirts a year. I think there's a lot there. He's a starter for you his last couple years at school. Kyle Whittingham, 4-star?
Yeah, I would do a 4-star for Kyle.
Mike Leach, where do we stand on Leach?
Oh, that's a good one. I think I got to go 3-star, like, kind of like his recruiting classes, but there's certainly 4-star flash. Yeah, he was like, some people think of him as a 4-star, but like the rankings pretty much across the board put him as a 3-star because of there's some bizarre things that happen that you just can't explain, like losing to FCS schools and things like that. But there's enough flash and potential that, the guy could be a 5-star one day, but I think today, you're still ranking him a 3, but there's that potential he could have been a 5 or could be a 5.
I'd probably give him a 4. Give him a 4. Okay. I think there's enough production there. I don't know if there's a ton of upside, but I think, you know what you're getting with Mike Leach. Like and that seems like a weird and crazy thing to say about Mike Leach, but you're going to get a competent enough team, and they're going to do some stuff, pretty well offensively, and they're at least of late going to be a little bit better defensively. But I think what you're getting at this point with his team. So I'm going to give him a 4-star. The Oregon school is Cristobal and Jonathan Smith. I'm giving them both 3 stars.
Yeah, it'd be hard to do much else just because they're new. We don't really know.
Jonathan Smith's like a 3-star who graduated early and is coming in early, and you know he gets a spring practice under his belt, and you know he could compete hard.
He could be compete hard, or he could just be like fourth on the depth chart forever, and you never hear from him again. You just don't know.
Right. Yep. 100%. Mike McIntyre.
Yeah, I was going to ask about him. 10-win season has to be worth, you know, winning the Pac-12 South. Something Whittingham hasn't done. That's got to count for something, but, you know, the turnaround this season going 5-7, not exactly what you're looking for. I think I'm going to go 3-star. What do you think?
3-star. Not consensus, though. I think there's probably one service that has him as a 4-star.
Okay.
Probably ESPN. But us out west, I think we'd call it a 3-star. Cal, Justin Wilcox.
Ooh. I think I'll do 3.
3 with potential.
Yeah, you know? There's potential.
Like a high 3-star.
Yeah. Because, you know, he does, you know, he knew he was green when he was hired, you know, and brought in the head coaches and stuff. But I wanted to see a better recruiting class this time around, too. So, I don't know. High 3-star, but, like I've said before, I wasn't a huge fan of his when I was covering at USC. Not that he was a bad guy, just I didn't think what his scheme was doing was working with the players that USC had. But he has been a good defensive coordinator other places, and I've been impressed with him as a head coach so far. So I'll give him 3-star.
And then I think it's all that's left. It's our man, Herm Edwards.
Oh, that's for last.
No service does 2-stars anymore, do they?
There's some, I think, right?
Okay, then he's a 2-star.
Yeah. I think aren't there 2-stars, or maybe not? I don't know. I have to look.
But. Well, I know like UCLA got a couple of commitments from guys who were like originally 2-stars. Like I think Baraka Beckett and John Gaines were both 2-stars, and then people saw their film and rated them 3-stars. So I don't know if anybody who actually commits anywhere ends up being a 2-star, if that makes sense.
Okay. But I have been impressed. Like I like the way they closed on signing day. You know, Antonio Pierce probably had a lot to do with that, but still, there's some potential there. I'm at this point kind of rooting for something good to happen, expecting something horrific to happen. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I fully expect this to be like the worst thing ever, but there's hope in me saying like, you know, hope I'm wrong. Like, let's see something cool happen out of all this. But, and this is one step, you know, top half of the recruit, you know, ranked in the top half for recruiting after being 12th. Pretty good, but we'll see. But yeah, it's hard to do anything but 2-star for Herm.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's nice. There's your ratings.
Very good question. I think that was our last one, right?
Yep. That's it.
Awesome. Well, we're a different podcast now. We have ads.
We won't be reading them every single show.
No.
Probably not, at least for the time being. But we will be reading them on occasion, and maybe we will be less awkward next time. Who knows?
Let us know how you thought the read went. But
or don't. Please don't.
Yeah. And it's certainly, if you're going to use ZipRecruiter, go to ZipRecruiter.com/POC. That's where you're going to get the best deal. So check it out. And I've always loved, like, I don't know if you guys do much on Bro, but when people email me, like if they try something that I was talking about, like Trader Joe's or whatever, and like, oh, I went there and it was great and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of cool. You know, it's like, I don't ever want to say anything. You don't want to talk about products that you don't like or don't believe in or anything. So at least I don't, but it's kind of cool when you hear something good come from like an, you know.
Ryan Abraham, tastemaker. That's you.
I try. I do love it. I mean, like, it's funny. Like, I love going to Trader Joe's. So when I talk about Trader Joe's, like, it's easy, you know? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right. Well, I guess that's our show for today. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We're going to get back to, I think we'll do the Mountain Schools next, where we do our deep down dive into the logistics and infrastructure of all the Pac-12 programs. Pretty good feedback from the USC, UCLA episode and the Arizona State episode. And we'll keep going forward with that. So, yeah, those
awesome.
Were fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's my good buddy, David Woods. Greg likes to call him Woody. I don't ever call you Woody, huh?
No, I think Biggins is actually the only person who does.
Really? So you're not like a Woody guy? Like people don't do
no,
that?
No, no, no. I'm very much – I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I don't care one way or the other. Most people just most people go with like a D Woods or a D Dub or Dave or really anything.
Yeah. No, I just don't remember. Like, I thought it wasn't cool enough to call you Woody. I didn't know if that was like everyone did and I didn't.
No, no. You can feel free. Anybody can feel free to call me literally whatever you want. Yeah. I'll answer to, hey, asshole, whatever. That's fine.
Nice. All right. Well, that's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Podcast of Champions. Another off-season podcast. So we're going to keep bringing them to you. Spring ball is starting up soon. So we're going to talk about all these other schools. If you have any questions, send them in. And thanks again. And we will talk to you next time.